back on the From the Horse's Mouth podcast. Myself and Rory DeLargy, my name is Patrick Kennelly. Thanks very much for joining us for a look at day two at Newmarket's July meeting and the other ITV races that they decided to throw on. Chuck in a nice little couple of races from York for us on a lovely Friday racing. Before we get stuck into the action at both Newmarket and York, I promise we had a great chat yesterday. If you want to listen back about the curious decisions of the stewarding at last weekend, I know it's been talked plenty on other pods and beyond, but it was good to get Rory's thoughts on it. Rory, another thing I want to get your thought on before we get stuck in is the it'd be nice to be in those cups of tea, those kitchens with Frankie Dettori and John and Thady Gosden. Maybe Thady's part of this conversation, we don't know, he's co-trainer, but obviously Frankie's back with John and they combine with Inspiral, who should win the Falmouth on Friday. Okay, I'll just ask you, has this whole escapade in terms of, has it surprised you in any way? What are your thoughts on it in general? Because I've got a few opinions anyway.
Yeah, it hasn't surprised me. It's because it's, there've been hints of it in the past as well. I was amused by the fact that everyone loves hearing John Gosden talk. You know, when anyone throws a microphone his way, what he says, it sounds like honey dripping from his lips, wisdom on tap.
The loquacious.
Yeah, but you know, he can be a bit petty as well. But again, he does it in the same tone, and you think, oh, well, John Gosden says it, it must be true. He could say anything, however ridiculous it might be, but if he says it in that John Gosden tone, people think, well, John Gosden said it, and it must be true. So he's had digs at Frankie before, but in a, we got away with that, and, you know, he'll refer to Frankie as, you know, what do you call him, our hero.
Our hero,
him, yeah.
Overcomplicated matters, yes. Our hero, yeah.
And he goes, yes, I did have a little bit of a heart attack, and I thought he wasn't going to, you know, he'd gone too soon, or he wasn't, you know. There have been situations in the past where Gosden has made little comments about Frankie's riding, where no one's really paid much of attention because they've won the race, and it's all, it feels like it's, you know, there's a bit of a love-in. But when things have gone wrong, as they have, and they clearly haven't just gone wrong at Ascot. This is clearly an issue that Frankie is not actually, he's not really famed as a workhorse, is he? He's brilliant. And like a lot of, you know, troubled geniuses, you know, it's all in his head. He doesn't want to be turning up to ride work at the crack of dawn every day to prove he's still got the enthusiasm. He wants to prove that on the race course. For a long time, this has gone really well. You got to remember, when John Gosden stepped in the first place, Frankie was almost on the scrap heap, you know, and at various times in his career, things could have gone horribly wrong. And I'd imagine that Frankie hasn't been the best manager of his own affairs down the years, without wanting to labour that. He needs a father figure, really, doesn't he? That seems to be the way. Luca Kamani filled that role early on. Barney Curley stepped in at an early stage when he thought Frankie was going to go right off the rails early on, and put an arm around his shoulder and give him a house to live in, of course. And then John Gosden stepped in. Well, Sheikh Mohammed, of course, became a father figure for him, and then that went sour. So he's always needed that figure to come on and go, okay, Frankie, come on. We can rebuild you. I'll give you the confidence, and you can show how good you are. And when that happens, you can see an immediate improvement in what Frankie does. But when that isn't there, he seems to lose direction. He seems to lose focus. And that was very obvious. At Ascot this season, there were a number of errors that you wouldn't have seen from Frankie Dettori 2 or 3 years ago, and I remember writing about his riding at Ascot maybe 2 or 3 years ago, where he regularly outrode Ryan Moore in the big races, and he was absolutely on fire. You know, all his instincts were absolutely spot on. Every decision he made in a big race seemed to be inspired. And now we've got the stage where Frankie is just, you know, for whatever reason, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but he hasn't got that focus. He hasn't got that confidence. And clearly John Gosden wanted to bring that to a head. And I think he thought it was better to bring it to a head by, you know, making it public. Because I'm guessing Frankie isn't the easiest guy to get through to. Because what most of us have said are clearly the statements that John Gosden's making would make an awful lot more sense if he had a quiet word. I'm guessing quiet words have been had, but Frankie isn't the ideal guy to have a quiet word with, because it doesn't necessarily, it might go in one ear and out the other if you have a quiet word. You kind of need to challenge Frankie's his ego.
Well, this is it, yeah.
To make a difference.
When John was talking again to Nick Luck a couple of days ago, And he said, we couldn't go the private route. We have to go the public route. I'm slightly paraphrasing, but he essentially said that. He essentially said, we have to go public. We didn't want to. Yeah. I'm just like, how did they have, why? Like, that is just crazy to me. I'm just like, any manager in any company, you know, would never like, you know, go into a quiet room and you have a chat. Yeah. It doesn't prove. Then you quietly go, right, look, let's take a couple of weeks break. But this was as public as it was ever going to be. You know, yeah. it was everything about it. And then we get to the turnaround. And nobody, unless you were John Gosden or Frankie or Teddy, thought that this sabbatical was going to be a week.
Yes.
Like, yeah. And if you did, you're lying. You know,
but like, it's almost like you have to cut off his supply, cut off his oxygen for a while before Frankie will realize what the situation is. And that's, it seems to be some sort of a drastic action needed to be taken. But once it got through, once the penny dropped, then that's it. It's all done. We've now recharged Frankie. We've rebuilt him. He's come to his senses, and he's probably going to, you know, show everyone what a great jockey he's going to be for the rest of the season. But yeah, he's always been like that, in that he's been a jockey whose brilliance has been impossible to explain. But also, you can tell with Frankie from his demeanor whether he's going to ride well or not. And most jockeys, you watch them walk into the weighing room, walk out of the weighing room into the paddock, you've got no idea what to expect. You watch Frankie and you can tell if you're going to get a good ride or not. And that's, you know, that's because he is that kind of genius where everything is personal. It's not about technique. It's not about practice as it is for most sportsmen. It's all about inspiration. And if he's not inspired, you end up getting some pretty poor rides. But when he is inspired, he does things that you struggle to explain.
Look, again, we're obviously on the outside here, folks, so we're totally guessing. A week off essentially is what he's been given. He's missed a Lancashire Oaks winner. I can't remember anything much else in the last week. That's essentially what Frankie's been punished with for his and it does sound like it's the stuff, not even the stuff on the course, it's the stuff that going to the Royal Ascot boxes before racing and giving a few tips that seemed to have completely got John Gosden. Has he got enough of a? I mean, it's probably the pride, maybe more for.
Yeah, I think Gosden knows him very well.
Yeah,
and he was, you know, he clearly felt that he needed to goad him, and that the normal way of doing things wasn't working, and Frankie was getting out of the habit of doing things properly, and therefore, you know, he's decided that this action needs to be taken, and either Frankie's going to throw the toys out of him and go, well, fine, if you don't want me, someone else will have me. And he will say, well, I'm going freelance. Or he goes, all right, I get it. And it's a snap thing.
Yeah.
He either gets it or he doesn't get it. I think Frank is the kind of guy who spends a lot of time not getting what other people's concerns are. But when he does get it, right, then it's done. Therefore, it's not like we need to give him 3 weeks off. You need to let him stew for long. I don't think you can let Frankie stew for that long.
Right.
You know, I think he could stew himself into something like goulash.
But
give him a week, and if the penny drops, the penny drops, and Gosden has clearly decided the penny has dropped. And if the rest of the season ends up being a real success story for Gosden and Dettori, then that's been a genius piece of work by the trainer, even though everyone's looked at it and gone, this is crazy. This is not the way to run one of the biggest yards in the country, from someone who is considered to be the wisest trainer in the land as well. But if it works out, then, you know, Gosden is a bit of a genius at managing his men as well as his horses.
Well, luckily for them, their first real big combination, she's got a penalty kick. Although you could argue that's a kind of a lose-lose situation. She's expected to win.
Yeah, he's definitely back if she wins, and if something goes wrong, then
That's actually good. Well, we'll get to in Spiral. Very interested to see how this plays out over the course of the season, Frankie and John Gosden. One assumes it'll be fine for the rest of the season, but it's a fascinating story. The few people I do feel sorry for are those who made the Frankie Dettori film, because they have missed out on probably one of those interesting chapters by going about 2-3 months too soon. Sorry, lads. They could add an old director's cut. Okay, let's talk about racing on Friday. We're going to look at the Newmarket card. The first race is due off. The first race they're going to cover is at 150, and this will be the Money Back Race on paddypower.com. This one on the app or online, whichever way you want to play. This will be money back if you're second, third, or fourth. So it's fantastic. It is a handicap over a mile and a quarter, heritage handicap. New London for Appleby and Buick is the 3-1 favorite at the time of recording. Obviously, a very disappointing, heavily heavily odds-on favourite at Chester, but now into handicap company, interestingly. Yonafis for Haggis and Markhand. Is there a handicap that we don't have a Haggis horse towards the top of the betting? Natural World for Appleby and Doyle. Reel him in, 7-1, 8-1 Warhorse. Swilcombe Bridges, 8-1. Knightswood, 9-1, and 12-1, and bigger the rest, including James Horton, who's got the big job with John Dance as a private trainer. He trains Phantom Flight. Interesting to see how he goes. Right, Rory, this is for three-year-olds again, this handicap, unfortunately. So this is an interesting profile, though, the favourite.
Yeah, he must have been second favourite for the Derby at one stage. If not, maybe favourite if things fell right, but maybe not. I think
Berg would have been favourite.
There was probably a 48-hour window where he might have ended up being Derby favourite before things changed. I think New London is the horse to be with here. He's got a very good draw in stall one in recent years. Stall one has finished first or second three times in this contest. Definitely a little bit of an advantage to be drawn near that stand side rail. I wouldn't get massively carried away with the draw, but sometimes if you're drawn on the extreme, it can be a negative. And I always try to check that out, see if that is the case. Definitely not the case here. And it's not like he ran appallingly at Chester. Again, going back to that race, everyone seemed to be off a mind that Ryan Moore is back, and the place that Ryan Moore got back was Chester, which he rode superbly, and I thought he stole that race on changing of the guard. And New London, just the way the race was run, he was rather taken off his feet and didn't look particularly happy around the bends. He's still six lengths clear of the third Savvy Victory, was coming off a win. I thought that was obviously disappointing because he was 4-11, having looked very impressive on his previous start at Newmarket, but he looked like the world might be his oyster at that stage. And I wouldn't want to get too upset with how that panned out. His win in that novice first time out this season, having also won on debut, he was the third string on both his first two starts for Godolphin. He led home at Godolphin 1-2-3 at Newmarket in that novice, carrying the red cap, which he did for debut as well, beating Aldous Huxley and Cosmic Desert. But I think most interestingly, Mr. Cut, who won well at Royal Ascot, was back and forth that day. And he rated about 100 now, isn't he? Mm-hmm. So New London had them all well beaten there. Gets into a handicap of 99. I just think that ends up looking I think it looks very fair based on the Chester run, quite frankly. I think it looks lenient based on what he did at Newmarket and how that form has worked out since. And I expect him to run very well. And it may well be the Natural World, the stable companion, could be his biggest danger as well. Because although he disappointed on softish ground at Goodwood, I'd probably put that down to the ground. That was in the Cocked Hat Stakes. He'd beaten the winner of that race on his debut. That's the race he won on debut has turned out to be very good form. He beat Ottoman Fleet, who's winner next time. It'd be Lionel, who won that Cocktail Stakes. And he had the likes of Valsad, who won the Mile 6, or placed in the Mile 6 handicap at Haydock last weekend. A very warm contest. He was back in fifth that day. Double Cherry, who was also a big fancy for that contest, was sixth. That's really, really good form. He hasn't really backed it up since, but when he went to Lingfield for the Lingfield Derby trial, he stayed on the far rail, which was absolutely dead. And the two who dominated ended up coming a long way off the rail and raced up the centre of the track, which you need to do at Lingfield. Staying on the rail is a crazy thing to do, but that's what they did. Jack Mitchell riding National World kept him there, and that's what saw him beaten four lengths. I thought he was a lot better than the result there. And then he's just flopped at Goodwood. Now, you could argue he's going the wrong way already, but I would put that down to either the track or the ground at Goodwood. I think he'd be a happier horse on quick ground. He's bred to progress a fair bit more as well. Whether you would rate him £3 higher than New London based on what they've done, I don't know. New London is the most appealing of the field in terms of what he's achieved. But I think Natural World is capable of better as well. And it's always tricky when you have handicaps where you might have Group 1 horses in the first two positions. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Natural World or New London progress enough to do what the likes of Ubeer was doing last year and go and pick up Grade 1s or Group 1s in other jurisdictions. So I don't want to start. Yonafis is interesting. He's better than the bear result at Ascot last time. You start looking through the form book and saying, oh, this horse run pretty well in a handicap. His mark's okay. the front pair, particularly New London, are almost certainly group horses. And when you get a handicap and you've got group horses heading it, it makes sense to look at the group horses and not get too carried away with the rest of the form. So I think the Godolphin pair are the two who can dominate it. And New London doesn't have as much to prove as Natural World, arguably is better form anyway, and yet is getting weight from Natural World. So he's the obvious one to go with. But I still probably have a saver on the other one.
Okay.
He might end up shifting to a decent price, because second strings, by definition, tend to get ignored in the betting when they shouldn't do.
Yeah. Well, the boys in blue to the four in the opener. That is the 150, the opener on ITV, the 150. So watch out for the New London in the main and Natural World potentially as a backup. Right. The Duchess for Cambridge, which is the 225 in Newmarket. And this is a group two for over six furlongs for the fillies. And we got some Royal Ascot form with Moj, who finished a cracking second as well. Back to Ascot, is currently the 7-4 favorite as we speak. Now we're talking on Wednesday, so plenty of changes could be between now and then. 5-2 Lazoo, Frankie Dettori and Rafe Beckett. This is one of the few horses he's ridden since the split. That's not a split anymore. That's a 5-2 second favorite. 5-2 second favorite also for Mayland C. That one for Michael Bell and Nines Bar. So it looks like between the top three in the betting. All right, this is a nice, tidy little contest, Rory.
It is. Yeah, I'm slightly surprised that Marge's favorite. I thought she ran extremely well, and it may well be that Meditate is something out of the ordinary, but I didn't think the Albany was as strong as the Queen Mary. Again, it tends to be the Albany's a group three, the Queen Mary's a group two. It tends to be the race where you send your fast fillies. And then of course the case here is we're up to six furlongs. You have to decide whether Morge is more of a chance because of this trip. But I thought the way Mayland C shaped in the Queen Mary, that she wouldn't have any problem with the trip. I know she's got a very speedy pedigree, but she stayed on very strongly in the finish to come out clear best of the low drawn horses. And again, she ran into an absolute superstar that day. There's no doubt in my mind that Carl Burke's filly, Dramatized, is very, very good at five furlongs. Good enough to run in the Nunthorpe, certainly. And I thought Mayland C, who couldn't really match that rival last time out, but also was racing quite a long way away from her. But she beat those she raced with very easily, I thought. And she came away from them in the last furlong. She sort of nudged to the front inside the final furlong on the far side of the track. But the distance she put between herself and the others on her side suggested she would relish the six furlongs. And if she does, I think she's got the best form. I think that, as I said, the form of the Queen Mary is better than the form of the Albany. The trip of this race obviously makes that slightly more interesting. But from what I saw, I thought Mayland C was crying out for six furlongs. And if she is, then she's hard to beat here. I should mention Lazoo as well, who's I was with when she won the Maureen Britton Memorial at Newmarket last time. I just wondered whether this would come a bit too soon for her. It's less than a fortnight after that race. She's not been with Rafe Beckett that long. She was bought, I think, at the Breeze Ups in France. She won at Bath on debut and then turned out a fortnight later to win at Newmarket. Maybe she's just ultra tough and she's able to take another step up to a group company on the back of that. And I do like her. Mm-hmm. I was impressed with how she did that, both at Bath and at Newmarket. And I wouldn't... I don't want to suggest that I'm knocking her chance, but I thought Mayland C had very strong form claims based on the Queen Mary, while also looking like she would improve for a step up to six furlongs.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how the market develops between now and that race off at 2:25 on Friday, the Duchess of Cambridge. Mayland C, the one.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Okay, move on to a big field handicap at 3:00, a mile and three quarters here. Watch out for extra places for this race, or extra places yet to be confirmed as we speak. And a couple of friends of the pod in this particular race. Candleford given a great shout and won to handstands at Royal Ascot, makes the market for Haggis and Markand 7-2, one of a couple you put in the put up in that race at Royal Ascot. That was the 7-2 favourite as we speak. Midnight's Legacy for Alan King, now Flat Trainer 6-1. Contact for David and Nicola Barnes 8-1. Trawler Man is 10s for John Thady Gosden and James Doyle. And we get to another friend of the pod, Zoffy, who Ruby Walsh tipped up to win the Northumberland Plate. Vaz, which one? One of the two. Anyway, it was the lesser one, I think.
It was the Vaz, yeah. We all know who won the plate, don't we?
Oh yes, of course. Sorry. Yeah. Well, it was the greatest performance of all time, as we know. So Zoffy put up, I think Ruby put up 16-1, and you put up Candleford last time out at Royal Ascot. Right, look, Haggis 7-2. I don't know if that's going to do your. Potentially tipped up a favourite and already won handicap today. Surely you're not going to do it again.
I'm not going to do it again. No, I'm going to go for an outsider here. I'm not anti Candleford, but you know, when you're punting, you want to be backing them low in the weights and high in the betting, as it were, or you know, big in the betting. And Candleford's gone up a lot for that Royal Ascot win. And I would rather search for value. People sometimes think that's very disloyal. This horse won for you last time. You're not backing it. Horse doesn't care whether I back it or not, to be perfectly honest. So it doesn't bother me. Uber Cool is a horse I like here. Now, I liked Uber Cool briefly for the Northumberland Plate. It's always in the entries. I like the horse a lot. He tends to go well fresh. He won after a long, long break a couple of seasons ago. And I thought, oh, interesting that Jane Chapel Higham, who is absolutely flying, three runners at Royal Ascot, two winners and a second at 40-1. I thought he's really interesting. And then I started looking at his all-weather record, which is poor. And then looked at his sire's record, which I was aware that it's not particularly good. Born to See's record as a sire on the all-weather is absolutely deplorable. Really, really poor figures compared to his figures on turf. And I thought, right, well, Uber Cool cannot possibly win this Northumberland Plate then. But as long as he isn't completely lapsed, I'll be very keen to be on him next time out. And here we are. I got a chance to back him next time out. The handicap was kindly dropped in £3 for running in a race that he couldn't possibly win on the surface. So I like that quite a lot. She's still an underrated trainer, Jane Chapel Higham, as she showed with just the ability to dig out three horses to take the Royal Ascot to run well is impressive enough in the first place. But to get the results that she did just shows that she's a very, very good trainer of the horses that she has. She gets really good results with them. Uber Cool has been a hard horse to train over the years, but she's done well with him since getting him. He was a very good second to Rajinsky at Ascot last season, beaten four lengths that day, but Rajinsky's one off, you know, £10 higher since. Or thereabouts. He was rated 92 that day. He ran very well in his next turf start. As we know now, there's no point looking at his form in the all weather because he doesn't handle it at all. So two disappointing efforts since. I've just seen him drop £4 in the weights.
Lovely.
So he comes here pretty fresh, well handicapped, and he will be a big price because he's finished 11th of 20 last time out, and people will look at that as the relevant piece of form. Whereas my argument is that it's utterly irrelevant. So I think he can hit the frame. Again, if he wins, that'll be a bonus, but I'd be more than happy just picking up the place, and he will be overpriced.
Yeah, he's 16-1. Now there's only two horses bigger in the market, so we'll see how he goes. That's Uber Cool in the 3 o'clock. Really interesting shout, and I'm sure there'll be extra places. We won't be getting extra places in the Falmouth Stakes, which early contender for the worst Group 1. To be run this season. Maybe I'm being harsh because
it's not the most appealing Group One, but it's not a bad race in terms of the quality. And in fact, if you took the favourite out and
obviously
shoveled in a couple more who were as good as the sort of second and third in, it would look a perfectly good race. It's because she looks like she's unbeatable.
Yeah,
no one wants to turn up. Yeah.
Yeah. She being inspired. She's 1-4 favorite as we speak. God knows what way that go in the market. 10-1 bar. Prosperous Voyage for Beckett and Hornby. It would be fantastic to Rob Hornby to get a Group 1 winner just a couple of weeks after what happened with the Derby in Westover. The Irish Derby. 11-1 Sibylla Spain. 12-1 Prima Batio. 16-1 Sandrine. All right. So, Rory, picking the bones out of this one, obviously, for punters and people who do want to bet in the race, they're going to want to know what finishes second to Inspiral. Unless, of course, you think Inspiral gets beaten. And then we've got a headline. We've got a headline if that's the case.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, but again, you're probably looking for what to have for the forecast here, and I can't quite can't really get my head around why Prosperous Voyage ran so poorly at Ascot. The market did not speak for her. She was very weak in the market and she ran disappointingly. She could clearly bounce back given that, you know, her best effort has come over a mile here on the Roly Mile, obviously on the July course now, but it's not massively different. But also that day, Sandrine ran very well, went fifth in the Guineas, beating 2.5 lengths. So, you know, there's over 2 lengths between them on that form. I thought Sandrine wasn't particularly well drawn that day. And she was a little, she wasn't unlucky. She wasn't good enough to win last time out behind In Spiral or even to hit the frame. But she got a bit of trouble in running and she swung wide into the straight. I thought she was value for finishing a little bit closer. So I thought Sandrine might be the one to chase In Spiral home. Sibylla Spain's good enough to do it, of course, but she wouldn't go in the stalls at Ascot. So that's a bit of a question mark. Looking at her temperament, she hadn't really shown any signs of that I'm aware of in France. But it does put you off backing them. And Primo Baccio, she looked an absolute superstar in one run last year. And it was a run that worked out really well. And she just hasn't shown the same spark again. And I don't know what to make of her. But although she ran a lot better at Ascot last time than she had been doing when third to Saffron Beach, that race did fall apart a little bit. And I'm not sure it's as strong as it looks. So I'm against Primo Baccio. In Spiral is impossible to oppose. And I probably go Sandrine for the forecast. Although if you fancied going Prosperous Voyage instead, based on her, you know, just ignoring Ascot and backing her on the Newmarket form, that would make plenty of sense as well. And on the subject of Rob Hornby, yeah, I think people might expect that Rob might have had his confidence knocked a little bit by what's happened in the last couple of weeks. Well, his last four rides, he's ridden three winners, including a maiden winner at Foss last night at 125-1. So he's doing all right.
That'll do. Yeah, that one for Ismail Mohammed, 125-1. Yeah, well, hopefully some people back that. Yeah, look, good luck to Rob Hornby, as I said. It'll happen to every young jockey, and it's just about, you think of Davy Russell, happens to experienced ones as well, and they managed to do okay afterwards. A couple of races at York are just going to quickly touch on that are live on ITV. The first of those is the 205. It's a 1.5 mile handicap. We're operating without prices at the time of recording. Danny Tudhope, we always watch out for anything he rides, particularly in the Clipper Logistics colours. You mentioned that Dramatize might run or maybe Target at the Nunthorpe. I don't know how heavy Danny Tudhope is, but 8 stone, if 2-year-old filly in the Nunthorpe, what are you looking at? 8 stone 3, is it?
Yeah, you would have had less than that in the old days. I'm sure the last time we had a flying filly, it was seven stone 13 or something like that. Yeah.
You may want to stop eating now then if you want to ride her in the Nunthorpe. Anyway.
Well, yeah, we don't force the jockeys to ride quite as light as they did, so Danny might get lucky there.
Who knows? Yeah, of course, they actually carry mythical weights now. We don't even know what they're carrying. 205 York, 1.5 handicap, headed in the handicap by Danny Tudhope's Mount Southern Voyage. You got Bolland Joan in there for Tim Eastbury. We always keep an eye for his runners at York. Any initial thoughts on this?
My initial thought here, I think we've probably had our fun with Bolland Joan. She did me a really good favour when she won at the Dante meeting. Yeah. At quite a big price, it was just a massive price in the morning. And then she followed up at Ripon, but her run at Ripon last time out was disappointing. She might just be in need of a break, but it's always hard to say that with Tim Easterby's horses because they do have a habit of bouncing back from moderate runs. And she's better than that. She'd beaten 18 lengths in the end, but she went off an odds-on favourite and she traded pretty short in running as well. Looked like she was going to come through and win, and then all the fizz went out of her and she was eased right off. But she's gone up a fair bit in the weights, £2 lower than that, but she's still higher than for her win here early in the season. I thought Strawman might be the horse to beat here for Gemma Tutty, Conor Beasley riding, a winner at Redcar about 5 weeks ago. Just an ordinary looking handicap at Redcar that day, but it's worked out pretty well. He beats Myristica of Tim Eastwood, who won next time out. Enfranchise was third, who has won a handicap since, and of course finished second in the Old Newton Cup the other day. And Jean-Baptiste was fourth, who was a winner next time out. And Fairmark, who actually reopposes, was back in seventh that day. So that form is pretty good. He could only finish sixth at Carlisle last time out, but he was badly drawn the way that race panned out. The first five home came from stalls 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6. And the horse was drawn 5, was a stone out of the weights and a 50-1 shot.
So what the hell happened to that one?
The draw seemed to favour the low numbers that day. Strawman was drawn 9, had to come wide off those runners when they weren't fanning across the track. So I had to do a lot more work to get involved. I thought he shaped better than the bare result. That was probably a career best, really, despite only finishing sixth. The handicappers left him on the same mark, and I thought he was capable of winning again off that mark. Gemma Tutty is first season with a license, but she's taken over from her mother, Karen, and her father had the license before that, Nigel. So the family are steeped in racing in the north. Gemma Tutty very much knows what she's doing. So Strawman Appeals is the likeliest winner of this and hopefully be a reasonable price after that last run.
Fingers crossed. Right, Strawman, watch out for that in the 205. And the 240 is the feature at York as far as ITV is concerned. It's the Summer Stakes, the Group 3 over 6 furlongs. And the friend of the podcast returns this time. It is Flotus, tipped up at 5-0 or 4-0, 40-1. I can't remember. It was a big price anyway. And snuck into the places at Royal Ascot. Great shape by Rory. We're not going to get, I can tell you now, Rory, the fancy prices, because I'm looking, we've already priced up, and Flotus is the 7-4 favourite for this race. 6-1 for Hala Hala Athmani for the Kevins in Ryan and Stott. Zane Claudette for Ismail Mohammed, who hit the headlines with his 125-1 winner in Wales earlier this week, is 6-1, 10-1 Teresa Mendoza. That's the Irish rater for Ken Condon, and also 10's benefit for Clive Cox and Gale Force Meyer for Michael Dodds. Right, Flotus, I suppose the obvious starting point, but are you going to abandon again?
No, I'm not going to abandon Flotus. I'm not getting the fancy prices here, but the argument about Royal Ascot was that her previous run was completely underrated. And that has now proved very much the case. Not only has she run an absolute cracker up the middle of the track as well, probably where the slowest ground was in that race in the Commonwealth Cup, but Sense of Duty, who won that race, has come out and proven herself to be a Group 1 filly, essentially, by running away with the Chip Chase Stakes. She's not proven a Group 1 company yet, but that was the reaction of most people watching her win by a wide margin there. Benefit, who was third, has won a decent race since. And Teresa Mendoza was back in fifth. So, you know, the form adds up there. She was impressive at the back end of last season as well, Flotus. Just needed her return at Newmarket and has run two absolute stormers since to show that she's at least as good as ever. She appears to have a decent draw here, all things considered. There shouldn't be an awful lot in the draw, but she should lead near side. A Day to Remember, maybe Symphony Perfect will cut out the running on the far side, but I think Flotus will bounce out and make them all go here and will prove extremely hard to beat.
Lovely. The First Lady of the United States. What's Joe's wife called? I don't even know. We all remember.
Oh yeah, I don't know. No,
we all remember, I was going to say we all remember the last two. Trump had your one, and then
your one, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can't remember her name. First Lady of the United States, Flotus 7-4 at the time of recording. Interesting to see what kind of price she goes up. Right, and that is the ITV action covered. Now we need your Friday best bet, please, Mr. DeLargy.
No prices makes it a little bit difficult. I'd be very, very sweet on Flotus, unless she's a ridiculous price.
7-4 now.
7-4. Okay. Well, yes, it's skinny enough for me to go
nabbing. Okay.
I might then go with. Did you have a price on Strawman in the opener?
No prices there. The one race you picked. The one race.
Strawman, and
you can still pick it. Strawman.
I can still pick it. Yeah.
And you can say at
whatever you'll have prices later on.
Yeah, of course. Well, and you can say at X or bigger. That's fine, right? That's fine. So what price?
That's fine. Let's see. What
do you want to stick a number then? Do you want to stick a number then? At
Fourth. At 7-2 or bigger.
7-2 or bigger, right?
Definitely going to be bigger than 7-2.
When he's introduced at 9-4 with Frank Hickey, who definitely doesn't listen to this pod, then you know you'll know your fate at that stage. Okay, Strawman, the 205 at York, the one to watch out for Rory. Brilliant couple of days covered. We'll be back for the busiest Saturday in the world of racing. We'll listen out for that podcast coming up later on tomorrow, where we go ahead and look ahead to, I don't know, about 68,000 races from all of the same tracks. Racing TV, best of luck on Saturday. Until then, stay well, stay safe, and tune in tomorrow.